Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. America is in the midst of the deadliest drug epidemic in U.S. history. In 2017 alone, 70,000 Americans died from drug overdoses. It's a slow-moving disaster that is destroying entire communities with no end in sight. NOVA takes an unflinching look at the science and social impact of addiction. How do drugs of abuse alter the brain? Why is addiction so hard to control? As we learn more about how addiction works, what are we learning about how it can be beaten? Sarah Holt is writer, director, and producer of NOVA's Addiction. It premieres tonight on SDPB-TV. That's at 8 p.m. Central, 7 Mountain. It's also simulcasting on NOVA's Facebook page, where you, the viewers, can join in that conversation online. There's a lot of interactive content tied to this NOVA film at pbs.org/NOVA. Sarah Holt joins us now on the phone from Boston. Sarah, welcome back to the program.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Sarah, every NOVA is exceptional, but the last one that really sort of undid me that I can't get out of my mind still is the Alzheimer's one, which was also your work. And now this one on addiction, it's so stunning. I don't think I'll ever forget it. What led you to this topic? Were the two tied together when you were looking at brain research in one area? A natural extension was to go in this direction?
Well, after the Alzheimer's show, my executive producer asked me, what should we look at next? And I said, you know, Alzheimer's impacts 5 million Americans. It's tragic. Most people get Alzheimer's at the end of their life. But 20 million Americans are suffering with a substance use disorder, and it often impacts people at the beginning of their life. And I just felt like this is such a pressing issue. And so many films focus on the tragedy, and it is a tragedy. And I wanted to make a film that could help people understand what is addiction, how does it work, but most importantly, to start looking at what science can tell us about effective treatments. What are the solutions we can take right now to stop preventable deaths? Because there's so much we could be doing.
And one of the people who you interviewed are so passionate, you know, about what they do and the work they're doing, and you could also hear frustration in some of their voices about, you know, when they say things like, this is the number one domestic issue in America, or they say, we have to embrace addiction as a disease. And you can sense, did you sense when you interviewed people a sense of there's so much that we know that people don't understand, even though we know this science? There's a lot we don't know, but we're not embracing the things we already know.
I know, we're not. And I think the tragedy is that there are so many things we could be doing to get people into effective evidence-based treatment and to save lives. So I think one of the things that was amazing to me is that addiction's really not part of the medical system. Families are left on their own to navigate a broken system of care. In the film, Mary Winnefeld, who's married to Admiral Winnefeld, is on the internet trying to find treatment. If her child had cancer, a doctor would be sitting with her saying, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to do this, and her insurance would cover most of that treatment. So I just felt compelled. I did want to, you know, illuminate some of the problems, but I also wanted to focus on some of the solutions.
Right. And Mary is in a family that has the means, and she has she's a sophisticated advocate for her son. And that story doesn't have a happy ending, and it's partially because even when somebody is all in and has the best insurance and the deepest pockets, the treatment itself was not effective for her son. So let's talk about some of those legacy treatments and how we've approached addiction in the past and how that's changing.
Well, for a long time, one of the most common models for treating addiction was Alcoholics Anonymous in the 12-step method. And, of course, it's helped many people achieve recovery, many people. But many people are failing to get better using that approach, especially in the opioid epidemic. And what I would love to do is not have a tribalism camp, this approach against that approach, because we need all approaches. But we do have highly effective medications right now for opioid use disorder that stop cravings, that stop people from going into withdrawal, that can stabilize people and give them a chance then to engage in therapy, education, peer support, rebuild their community. And yet there's such prejudice against these medications. And one of the problems is people often say, oh, they're just trading one drug for another. And that really isn't true. Addiction is defined by the compulsive use of a drug despite negative consequences. When someone gets put on a medication like Suboxone, like methadone, their craving stops, their withdrawal stops. They're able to stop using. They can get up and go to work again, go to school. They can reengage with their family. The negative behavior stops. That is not the definition of addiction. And just like with diabetes, many people can regulate their disease with, you know, exercise, diet. Other people need medications, and I would just like to see us have a more inclusive, you know, approach towards treatment and matching the right treatment with the, you know, the right patient with the right treatment.
Right. I'm not sure if this was your intention, but you know, a lot of this program deals with the stigma and the shame. And there's one point where there's a baby who's being treated, a baby who's been born, you know, with an opioid addiction, and they're treating it, the child with medication. And it, because it is so obvious that this baby has done nothing wrong, you start looking at this moment differently than when you look at adults who are dealing you know, with their treatment. And I thought that moment for me spoke, you know, to, I came to this program with an open mind. And even I, when the baby was like, oh, that's, you know, it's not the baby's fault. Well, it's a medical condition. So I was caught, you know, revealing one of my own, you know, sort of biases, there too. But of course,
well,
you're going
to
give the baby medication. Yeah.
The baby is not addicted because the baby is not actively, you know, engaging in negative behavior to get a drug. The
withdraws.
Baby is more dependent.
Yeah.
And I think most people don't understand is that if a mother is struggling with addiction, it's really important to get them on medicated assisted treatment. That is the standard of care because it cuts the overdose risk in half. It protects the baby from dangerous contaminants in street drugs. It stabilizes the mother. The baby's much more likely to be born full term, full birth weight. And, you know, oftentimes you can avoid having the baby even go through withdrawal. But if a baby is born dependent on opioids, they do have to slowly taper them off to make them comfortable and help them. So it, you know, it's hard to watch. I mean, every 25 minutes in this country, a baby is born dependent on opioids. But I think one of the solutions is that we have to support, you know, mothers struggling with addiction and stabilize them on medications that can, you know, help them cope.
Tell us about opioid refugees. And you have a story of a girl named Casey. She's an athlete, and her journey is particularly, I think, will resonate with a lot of people of how her opioid addiction really began.
Well, you know, unfortunately, Casey intersected with the medical system when she was 14 years old, when the mandate was we're going to aggressively treat pain. And she had inexplicable pain. Later on, they realized it was fibromyalgia and rheumatoid arthritis. But at the time when she entered the medical system, no one really knew what was causing her pain. And she had operations, but they thought maybe these benign masses might be pressing on nerves. Maybe that was the source of her pain. And she was given copious opioids. And she actually became addicted to the opioids given to her by her doctor. And the amazing thing was once I finally realized that was going on, she kept going home and going through acute opioid withdrawal after being in the hospital on opioids for over a month. And they'd give her more opioids, send her home, she'd go through withdrawal, she'd go back and get more opioids, and finally a doctor said, she's addicted. And he basically came out and shamed her family. It wasn't any fault of her. She took her medication as prescribed. And what happened to her was she was completely cut off. And so she had to go through withdrawal and cravings, and she began battling, you know, the just powerful forces of addiction. I mean, she eventually got effective treatment, and she's doing great today. In fact, she's on Suboxone, studying to become a doctor. And she's doing really well, but it was a long, hard journey.
Talk a little bit about the science behind this, you know, the role of dopamine, the role, you know, how does this all work in our brain, and how does our brain really change? Let's get into the science of it.
Well, one of the problems, you know, for us is that our brains are exquisitely wired to find and seek rewards wherever we can. That's how we survived in evolution. So, unfortunately, drugs are some of the strongest rewarding substances we can take, some of the most powerful experiences we can take, for one reason. They release massive amounts of a neurotransmitter called dopamine. Dopamine is normally released when we eat something pleasurable, when we have sex, fall in love. It's a chemical that tells us that's important. That's important for your survival. Find it again. Seek it again. Pay attention. But unfortunately, addictive drugs can release dopamine levels, you know, between 2 to 10 times more. And so the brain is flooded with dopamine, and then, of course, it tries to regain its balance, and so it cuts back your supply of dopamine. So what happens if someone crosses that line into addiction is that they lose the ability to make dopamine, and they wake up and they crave it. You need just to equate dopamine with motivation. And one of my favorite moments in the show is we're showing people that are looking like they're passed out on the street, and, you know, Dr. Corey Waller is saying you might see someone like that and think they just need to motivate, they need to get up. But what we're really asking them to do is to magically make dopamine. Mm-hmm. And I think once you begin to understand that addiction is so hard to understand, it's so hard to understand why is someone doing something that's hurting themselves? Why aren't they going out there and getting jobs or, you know, engaging in life the way other people are? Why are they so focused on these drugs? Because people begin to use just to feel normal. When they take drugs, they get their dopamine levels back up, and it becomes a vicious cycle.
Where is the innovative work happening? What are people doing that's new, that's different, that's addressing this problem of addiction in new ways? Where does the hope lie?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I think is hopeful is that medication-assisted treatment is slowly becoming more available across the country, but we need more providers, and we need people not to stigmatize this treatment because it's saving lives. You know, another thing is just harm reduction. I mean, people may be very uncomfortable with offering people that are suffering with addiction clean needles, safe injection, you know, kits, Narcan. But, you know, we have to really be practical because, you know, for every dollar we spend on harm reduction, we save up to $7 in medical costs. We stop the spread of HIV, Hep C, you know, infections that can, you know, hurt people's heart valves. And people that begin to, you know, engage in harm reduction and be safer in their drug use also are 5 times more likely to eventually engage in treatment. And so that's just one thing immediately we can do across the country, you know, try to keep people safe, try to engage them in harm reduction, and eventually try to engage them in treatment.
Because there's a gentleman there who is in one of those clinics in Vancouver, and he says this moment when someone comes in is also that moment of connection. That's the opportunity. They've said, I don't want to do this. I don't want to die in an alley. I will come into this, and that now it's a medical procedure, and now we can take steps in a new direction. Also, Massachusetts, at the hospital there, they were talking about, you know, someone presenting at the emergency room and getting people right into treatment from that interaction versus sending them back out on the street.
You know, what's really incredible is if you revive someone from an overdose, which is amazing, Narcan is an amazing drug, it does eventually put someone into acute opioid withdrawal. And so if you don't treat them, they're going to be put back out on the street incredibly sick. Opioid withdrawal is unbelievably painful. And that person is going to be driven to go back and use again and be at risk for another overdose. At Mass General, they immediately offer people medications like Suboxone that stop withdrawal, cut the cravings. They give them a prescription to go home. They tell them, come back in 2 days. They have really a low barrier. They meet people where they are. If they're not ready to engage in medications, they discuss other ways they can make them more comfortable and help them. But the whole goal is not to shame the person, but to help them. And, you know, I really wish that could be a model that would be instituted across the country, that anyone could walk into an emergency department and get help immediately.
Addiction is on tonight on SDPB-TV, 8 Central, 7 Mountain. And Sarah, in just our remaining 30 seconds or so, the interactive online components. As a filmmaker, people go to pbs.org/Nova and connect with the program as it airs. What are you hoping for as a filmmaker from that kind of community conversation online?
Well, I'm hoping that people, one, begin to, you know, realize this is a highly stigmatized illness. We need to be open about what's going on. We need to support people with addiction. I'm hoping that people will begin to demand that addiction be treated as a medical illness, that we can actually, you know, help people instead of stigmatizing them and shunning them.